This is Kent Clothier. If you are looking to improve your life, improve your business, and just get it all together, you're in the right place. Welcome to the Time Is Now podcast.
What's going on, man?
Not much. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you, though? Glad you were able to make it.
No problem.
My guest is Dan Noma. What is happening, my friend?
Oh, not much, man. Well, thank you very much for having us on.
Of course, brother. I'm glad you carved out the time for us here. It means a lot to me. And yeah, sure. I'm glad that we can kind of bring some real insight to some people here. My hope is that we'll probably spend, 45 minutes here together and really kind of talk through some of the stuff that we know is going on out there clearly, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So Dan, for people that don't know you, I mean, I know you've been at this a long time. Give us like the 2 to 4 minute kind of overview, who you are, what you're currently doing, what you've done in the past, all that kind of good stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So I am a licensed broker here in the state of Arizona. So I own a brokerage here in Arizona called Venture REI. And our specific niche is really working with institutions, private equity groups, hedge funds, really on their investments and the acquisition and disposition of single family for rent assets. So my clients are groups like Invitation Homes, Progress Residential, First Key Homes, Service Financial. These guys that are coming in are buying American Homes for Rent. They're buying thousands of homes to rent annually. That's our niche deal. And so my team has had to learn early on how to speak to consumers directly, in order to field a bunch of opportunities that would work. Like we just learned, when someone comes and they say, I want to buy 1,000 homes to rent. While that sounds like a really good problem to have, it actually really is a problem. You can't buy 1,000 homes off the MLS. So we have to think about different ways that we can source that inventory to our clients in order to feed the monster. So specifically, in the last couple of years, we've really gotten dialed in with those iBuyers. So groups like Opendoor, OfferPad, Zillow, any group that's kind of disrupting the industry, we really took a different position on this. And we decided that, we were going to look at these guys just like we look at it as an institution. And if we can figure out ways to sell them houses, they just become another buyer in our buy box. And we could start really filtering them opportunities. And so fast forward a little bit, I guess 2018, my team did 3,500 transactions. We sold, 70% of those to institutions and iBuyers just in Maricopa County in Arizona. And so that kind of put us in a place to really go out and talk a little bit more about what we were doing with some of those iBuyers. So we created iReal Estate Pro, which is the t-shirt I happen to be wearing today. But iReal Estate Pro is the first real estate certification for real estate people, whether they're licensed wholesaler or their real estate agent, broker, owner, really to have their own iBuyer certification and platform, right? So I teach them not only what these guys are looking for and how to sell them properties, but I give them the connection points to be able to do it and show them exactly how to get that done. So that's been going great. We've been traveling around the country teaching real estate people how to work that, the disruptor is not a bad thing. It's actually a really cool tool for your toolbox. And
yeah.
That's been our baby for the last couple of years here.
Yeah. And then you were telling me the other day that there's, kind of offices like yours, et cetera, would you tell me 20 plus cities?
Yeah. So we have 24 markets. There's an institutional broker that works in our network in each one of those markets. And so teams are set up, similar to mine in nature that so we could do acquisitions for these institutions all over the country. We have a very specific software that we all subscribe to. And that software is where you and I geeked out was in data, right? And so we have 20 years of rental data and sales data and rehab information and all kind of metrics that we need to get to in order to make the best offer we can make in the shortest period of time.
I love that. Yeah. I love it. Yeah, that's exactly where I geeked out. I mean, it was one of those where I was sitting there and I was like, holy shit, that this software literally is in large part, based on whatever institutions, that you guys are representing, in large part is basically telling you, hey, this is going to work or this isn't going to work in seconds, right? I mean, this is close or this isn't close, right?
Yeah. I mean, we take a look at the market every 90 seconds. So depending on the metrics of someone's buy criteria, right? Like let's use a broad example. Like let's say someone was going to buy, they were looking for a 6% yield, right? And they wanted to buy single family homes, 3-bedroom, 2-baths with no pools that had a garage in Phoenix. Well, in 90 seconds, I could write not only the inventory that's available, so the active listed inventory, but also everything else that's in the market that we also think might be a really good potential seller for us. So we've really narrowed it down to be able to go target specifically people that we know we have a really strong value proposition for. And so we're using a lot of predictive analytics and things to try to figure out who's most likely to sell. But you know, so far so good. It's been a process that's allowed us to kind of take data from a huge funnel and shrink it down to just a few and really pinpoint who we're trying to target.
Yeah, dude, it is so impressive. And I applaud you guys. I wanted you to have you on here and talk a little bit about, I mean, you can't help when you're dealing with this many properties, you know, 3,500 transactions you guys are buying and selling in a year. You can't help but gain some knowledge and have some insight and have some idea of at least one kind of the institutions that you're in front of right now, what they're thinking, right? What they're communicating, and then ultimately how you guys are taking that information and what are some of the pivots and moves that you're making and you know, kind of what you see, trying to help people look around corners a little bit here, right?
Yeah, totally.
So kind of give us your overview.
Yeah, I think there's really two ways to, two pools of potential clients here. You know, let's take the institution, the single family REIT buyer to start. You know, these guys right today, almost all of them are on pause. We've got a couple that are kicking tires and they want to get back out there and start actively buying again. They do see some opportunities. But right now they've all decided that, you know, it's time to pause. And the reason that we're pausing acquisition wise is, you know, we're having a hard time predicting what the future value of properties is going to be. Like, what is the post-renovation number really going to be, right? Remember, we used to buy houses at auction here in Phoenix. You know, I would take an ARV number and I would probably reduce it down by 10% in 2008. And that's how I got to what I thought the property should be listed at when I was done in 90 days. Well, today we don't have that luxury, right? There's just not a crystal ball what's happening. The good news is, you know, the institutions are very well capitalized right now, right? So some of the publicly traded ones took a little bit of damage, you know, in the last few weeks with the stock market, obviously. And so that's been, you know, an issue, but it's not the issue that drives them to buy or not to buy. The issue that's really driving them not to buy today is the rent moratoriums and the understanding of like who actually qualifies for some of these stimulus packages and who doesn't. So, you know, the way that the stimulus package reads here, like in Arizona, is, for example, you know, the tenants can stay in a property for 120 days. Without eviction, but it doesn't mean that they don't have to pay rent. So until mid-April, when we reconcile and figure out exactly who's paid rent and who hasn't, there's some uncertainty of, you know, how many people are either A, qualified and they actually need some government assistance. And then B, who are the people that we can identify that are really, they are not qualified, right? They didn't lose their job and they're just trying to take advantage of an opportunity. And so weeding through that, you know, one of our clients, Invitation Homes, they own about 100,000 homes nationwide. So doing that on 100,000 properties is going to be a challenge. The foresight is that, you know, everything is, they believe that this opportunity means that there will be buy opportunities in markets where there just hasn't been a ton of them recently, right? In Phoenix, I happen to sit in one of the markets that's like that, right? We had a price appreciation outpace rents. In the last 24 months, we've seen, you know, they haven't gone up exponentially together. And so the issue has really become that we've been priced out of the market. I can't buy a lot of houses in Phoenix today. So, you know, I can tell you that, you know, this is a perfect market to own single family for rent. This is why those single family REITs started in Phoenix. And they do want to get back here. So markets like us, you know, Las Vegas, Southern California, you're going to see these guys bounce back too faster because they know that the window of opportunity is probably pretty small before the prices will start to outpace them again. And so if they can eat up some of that inventory in the interim, they can really start to fill these portfolios. So the institution, all we've talked to are healthy. You know, most are set up with significant reserves to even deal with some of the rent moratoriums. But until that legislation's clear, it's going to be, you know, onesie twosie kind of pickups for a while until that legislation actually gets cleared out. the iBuyer, you know, the Opendoor, Offerpad, Zillow's of the world. I've heard a lot of noise about these guys going away, and I kind of stress the fact that that's certainly not the case. You know, we've sat in intimately in conversations with these guys and understanding kind of what's happening. And I think the big takeaway from you know, all the conversations is the fact that, you know, when they wrote their business plans, they never wrote a chapter in the business plan with regard to a pandemic, right? So, you know, their system isn't broken. This is just something that's outside of what they had ever planned for. So they're dealing with it in a couple different ways. And the first problem is, again, we talked about that future value. Without knowing what these properties are going to be worth in 90 days, it's really hard to make someone an offer today. And so the beauty of that iBuyer model is that they can turn and burn the property out. But the problem is, if we don't know what those future values are going to be and how many buyers are actually going to be around, then we could be underwriting a number that isn't real, right? So they don't want to put a false number in front of people. But the big factor today is really safety. You know, these are big companies, thousands of employees now, where, you know, there's some markets, right, in Denver and Washington State, where we can't even get services to the properties, pool cleaners, property cleaners, home inspectors, any of these people can't get to these properties. And so rather than exacerbate the problem by buying more properties that we can't service, the idea right now is to pause until some of these restrictions get lifted. Once we can guarantee services and safety to the properties, you're going to see every iBuyer come back, and they're going to come back with a fury. And we can get into why that is, but it's you know, it's not a capital issue, right? And then I think that's
it's not a demand issue, and from their standpoint, it's not a willingness and desire. It is simply that, to your point, there are some other external factors with their particular business models where they need to understand underwriting better in the near future, and two, they can't take any risk when it comes to your point, exasperating the problem, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we're not going to, I remember it in 2007 here, we had our first wave of foreclosures and, you know, going to these houses with green pools and all those things, like those were massive bills that the banks had to also take on, right? And a lot of that is really what kind of snowballed the problem and made it even worse. So I actually applaud them for thinking responsibly in this, like not only for their investor's sake, but also for like the safety of the communities. Like I think people forget in markets like Phoenix, Opendoor alone owns 1,400 homes, right? So that could be your neighbor, that could be down the street, it could be somewhere where if we can't get services to that property and it's a little unsure, we probably shouldn't continue buying them, right? And I think that's really where they're coming from on this. So they're anxious, they want to get back, they want to start buying houses sooner than later. And I think there's a ton of opportunity for people in the real estate space to really get, you know, a good message out there for their consumer right now, because I think that people are going to start transacting a little bit differently than we've seen in the past, right? And the idea of the instant offer, or, you know, knowing all of your available options without having to sit, you know, toe-to-toe with someone at your kitchen table, is probably going to gain some value through this process, right? There's going to be a lot of that baby boomer population in older probably that, you know, they're probably, even when it's safe, it's still not going to be safe enough, right? And they're probably still going to want to keep some social distance if possible. And so we just have to be willing to understand that there's enough people that care about it, and it's enough people that are sensitive to it, that we as a real estate community just need to have these options available in case it's the right option for that consumer.
Yeah, I think that you know, we've actually had this discussion. It's, I mean, how amazing cribs would be right now. You talk about perfectly positioned.
Yeah.
It irritates the piss out of me. But the point being is that what, you know, I saw the writing on the wall. You and I have had these discussions that kind of transaction like that was the future. And what is happening is now this has kind of forced the future on us. So adoption and changing the way transactions are done, to your point, is I think is going to become at least part of the new reality. Not completely, but it's going to be, people are going to be a lot more comfortable doing the deals like this, right? Virtually or these kind of instant offers, quick types of deals, a lot more than they ever would have been if this hadn't happened.
Right. Yeah. And that, you know, the other thing is certainty, right? The value of certainty in any declining market. And we still, I think, is unknown whether we are in declining market or not. But let's say we are in any declining market, the value of certainty goes up in a declining market. So, you know, if we can provide consumers with a certain choice in a market that's probably gotten a little rough, they're at least willing, more willing to give up potentially some more equity in order to play with these guys, right? So this is an option now that more consumer eyes are going to fall to, right? The numbers that they're reporting on their website significantly are going up, right? The consumer doesn't know that they're not making offers. It's not like they've posted it on their website. They're still going on the website, entering their information, and the inquiries numbers through the roof, you know, right, from consumers that want to know what their property's worth. Either it's A, they want to know what their property's worth, or B, they actually really do need to sell it. You know, and a lot of people think if you miss one mortgage payment, you're in foreclosure. And, you know, in some states, that's not quite true. So, you know, there's a lot of people scrambling right now. And so I think, you know, as a real estate community, it's educating and just saying, hey, look, let's just be patient and understand that everyone's dealing with this at different levels. And, you know, but I think the overarching, you know, common sentiment that everyone has right now from the institution and iBuyer space is that they believe that there is massive opportunity on the other side of this. This wasn't something that anybody wanted. They would have been fine working through what was the market beforehand. But the beauty of what's kind of happened now is that it will create a window of opportunity. And the cool thing about it, that for us as people that aren't maybe connected to the institution, is that, you know, they're going to capture a bunch of market share that's going to help us get it back to some kind of equilibrium faster, right? There's enough dry powder sitting on the sidelines where hopefully we don't see those massive days on market and huge supply sitting out there in the market.
That's actually a really good point that I had actually not even thought about, because that was very different than it was in the last recession. It took them
absolutely.
That a lot of the problem was having to work through all of that inventory and what it was doing, how detrimental that was. But now if you've got big institutions, yep, it should help the whole market move quicker.
Right.
You mentioned a comment earlier that I'm going to go back to, that I think you said it when we were talking about the iBuyers, that they're anxious, they're ready to buy, and they feel like there's a big opportunity. And you said we can talk more about that, you know, a little later. What were you alluding to?
Yeah, it's really, you know, the iBuyers are, you know, and specifically like a group like Opendoor, right? They very well focus on consumers, right? So these guys study consumers exhaustively, and what they're trying to understand is how people are going to start to transact, right? So that's what I was getting at, is that, you know, not only are they a certain option, right, for some consumers, they offer a virtual option to a bunch of consumers that before there was probably consumers out there that said, oh, you know, I have no reason to go virtual, right? There's no reason for me. Like, I can call my agent, Kent, he'll come to my house and that's no problem. Whereas now people are a little bit more conscious of maybe letting people in their house, or wanting to transact traditionally in that sense. So there's at least going to be a consumer that says, you know what, before I call Kent, my agent, I'm going to at least try this instant offer model, see if that works for me. Then I can avoid the headache of having to list my house traditionally and let people tramp through the house, right? So they offer something that, you know, you see the real estate agents now, they're all saying, oh, we can do virtual, we can do paperless this, we can do all this stuff. Well, they could have done all that ahead of time. And the iBuyers have been doing it for a few years now. But now they've just built massive machines to be able to do it. And they've gained market share. You know, markets like ours, you know, I see statistics all over the place, but, you know, we think that in their buy box, a group like Opendoor represents about 12 or 15% of the market, right? So it's a significant piece of the market. That number should only grow in this kind
right.
of model, you know? Yeah. And, you know, rents, like, people still need a place to live, right? So the institutions, a decrease in property value doesn't decrease their motivation to buy houses, right? These are humans that still need a place to live. It will decrease their offer prices, but at the end of the day, they still need to buy a number of houses, and they're buying houses on a yield. So it's really just a math equation. And so, you know, a non-emotional cash buyer becomes super interesting in a declining market where they can start to pick these things off. I mean, what we didn't have, like we said, in 2007, 2008, is groups like Invitation didn't exist, right? 2011 was the really the birth of Fund One. And we never saw an institutional investor that was willing to buy thousands of homes like this before, right? So we were trying to one-off these REOs to mom and pop wholesalers or investors across the country. Whereas now, I mean, you're going to see banks be able to give a paper to, you know, a group like an Invitation Homes and say, here's 30,000 homes that are in foreclosure. Which of these do you want, right? And they're just going to start picking those off.
Yeah, it's a new world we live in now, for sure. And the overarching theme, I want to make sure that it, certainly all my investors that are watching this and agents for that matter, is that the opportunity is only going to get bigger, right? Certainly, none of us want or would ever wish that the circumstances are what they are. But that doesn't take away from the simple fact that to your point, these institutions are sitting on dry powder. They're sitting in the wings. They're looking for an opportunity to get their feet up underneath them and feel comfortable. Yeah. And then they're going to move, and they're going to move very, very quickly, which for my investors that are watching this, that means you have an opportunity, a little window right here where there's a vacuum where, as what Dan just said, you know, there's a high value placed on certainty even right now, literally today, right?
Right. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've got a little instant offer, you know, website here in Phoenix, and it's just my team's instant offer platform, where agents or consumers can go directly on there and we'll get them all of the available options in the market. We've seen a significant tick up in consumers going to the website directly, right? And so we're not the size of Open Door. I'm not out there, you know, putting up billboards. And I'm seeing consumers that are at least willing to explore what their solutions are, right? So I think there's really cool ways to market to those consumers. And just by letting them know that, you know, like, things have changed, like we all agree to that. And there's probably, you know, a new value for your home. Let's just talk about that. Like, let's lead with fact and say, okay, here's what all the iBuyers are willing to pay. Here's what the institutions are willing to pay. Here's what I'm willing to pay you for your house. These are your options. Like, you know, and the value of a home is only what a set buyer is willing to pay. So that's a pretty good indicator for a consumer to say, okay, out of this, when the dust settles, now I know what my property value is worth. And if you can get enough people in the pipeline that are having those conversations, you know, some of them are going to move. And, you know, I also believe that, you know, you're going to see a significant migration, right? This could be the biggest migration in U.S. history, where we see people moving from state to state, right? I mean, if I was, you know, no offense to your California over there, but if I was stuck in a, you know, in LA in a 700 square foot apartment today, and I lost my job and I was looking for a restart, and I had an opportunity to get to maybe a drier climate or something warm, and I didn't have to deal with some of the issues, tax issues, things like that, I might start to consider it, right? Like, so it's going to start to see, you're going to start to see people moving across countries, right? Economically could drive that stuff too, right? We're seeing, you know, states can't operate in a deficit. What are these stimulus packages doing, right? They're putting a little bit more debt on the states. So these states are going to have to make cuts somewhere, right? So it could come from services. It could come from education. Like, parents may have to make decisions about their kids' education that forces them to move out of those states that have been hit really hard with this stuff. So, you know, these are things to look forward that are coming, you know, potentially with some particular homeowners that you're, you know, you really can start to dial it in with your data, saying, okay, these are the people that, you know, that I'm going to target with this specific message. But I think you got to be perfect in your kind of marriage of message and consumer in order to see results. There's too much noise out there, and that's why you've just got to be perfect with it.
I love that, dude. If you were asked today, and I'm going to ask you today, and you're looking out there at some of the markets that are going to be hardest hit and then represent, you know, opportunities to pick up distressed assets, et cetera. I'm assuming you guys have probably had some of these conversations. Where do you kind of see this short term and long term going?
Yeah. Short term right away, any markets are driven in hospitality, right? So we looked at Las Vegas being the number one target, we think, for the institution and iBuyer coming out of this. They're basically on full shutdown there. You know, you can walk down Main Street on the strip right now. It's pretty wild. But, you know, they laid off, I mean, I read a statistic the other day that it was like 450,000 people, right? Casino workers. those are short-term layoffs. That's not a number that's going to last forever. But even when it comes back, there's still going to be, let's say the number's 10 or 8 or whatever it is, it's still significant, right? You still have a significant number of people that are moving. We think that that market is going to get hit pretty hard by pricing, but will rebound really, really fast. There's a lot of good things going on in Las Vegas. The Raiders are coming, right? They're trying to get a baseball team. There's a lot of good things that make Vegas a really, really great place to live. It just happens to be, you know, kind of seesawed on hospitality, and hospitality got smoked in this. And so that's a market that we looked at and we said, okay, that's a place where we really need to start to study the infrastructure and make sure that when the time's right, we can buy there. Southeast has always been a really strong target for a lot of the institutions, Florida, Tennessee, Nashville, South Carolina, North Carolina, all of those markets, are going to be prime for this stuff. We're going to see a lot of activity in those markets where we think that there's just really good job growth and tons of people want to live there. There's a lot of good things going on in those markets. So we're starting to see some people fly down there. Phoenix is another one, right? Phoenix continues to kind of grow year over year. We're seeing a lot of Silicon Valley people start to move into Phoenix for their businesses. So we think that Phoenix is got some more room to grow. Residential permit number is not yet dropped, right? But they think we'll see about 17,000 units this year. That's pretty good, right? That's a pretty good number for us. I think your warmer climates are gonna be great. Now, could there be opportunities in New York after this is all said and done? Sure, right? I'm sure there's gonna be opportunities in California when all this is said and done. Again, both really desirable places to be. Doesn't mean the institutions are gonna play there. So it could mean that there's opportunities for localized investors, you know, smaller investors to hop into those markets and go target, because tons of opportunity coming that way.
So you mentioned earlier that a lot of the institutions that you buy for, they're buying, I think it's almost exclusive is what you said, they're buying for their own rental portfolio. Basically, they're buying to put renters in place, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And so walk me down what their thinking is on why that is a good investment for them, right? So they're putting money to work. Yep. And so why, obviously I have a vested interest in this, right? Because REI Nation's entire business model is the same thing at much smaller scale, but we sell 1,000 properties right now to individual investors, our investors that are buying cash flow properties in all of our cities as well. And I'd love for you to really explain why they think that and why most people think that is a good investment.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's an interesting model. I think it gets a little bit skewed by some people, as they don't understand why you would ever buy a 4% or a 5% return, right, on a residential rental asset. So the model works like this. Basically, you know, if I was an institutional person, what my job would be to do is first raise some capital. So I'd go out and let's say I raise, you know, $2 billion. This is an example that actually happens. We had a client raise $2 billion. They then took that $2 billion and they leveraged it with a major institution. So they leveraged it with a big bank, Chase, Wells Fargo, whatever, Morgan Stanley. They leveraged that money. So now let's say they've got a pool now of $9 billion to go buy single family assets with. Okay, fine. We go out, we execute, takes a year, we buy 20,000 homes across the country. That portfolio had a book value of $9 billion. Those guys then take that book, they stabilize the portfolio, they put out an IPO and sell it at market for, say, $11 billion, right? So now they've made their $9 billion back, so they own the homes for free. They've made $2 billion, so now they've got their equity for their next fund, potentially. But either way, now the public, whatever, you know, how many shares of this thing you own a little piece of, you know, 20,000 single family rentals across the country. So these things don't typically sell. We've not seen yet any of the major funds, like, they've sold off properties to clean up the portfolio when they've had some bad assets in it, underperforming, bad condition, stuff like that. But typically they don't sell them. These things end up being kind of pixie dust, for lack of a better word, and they never get resold again. And so that engine restarts again. So basically these guys, you know, there's groups like Invitation Homes, they're today on fund seven. So they've done this seven times over again, and every time it's been successful. Stocks trade, you know, they open around $20, $22, and they, you know, we've seen them trade as high as 26, but it's a pretty stable fund because it's really just based on workforce housing. So these are people that, you know, are working at Jiffy Lube, teachers, you know, firefighters, all of that kind of workforce housing homes that are cash flowing at a very, you know, significant number. And it's, once you do it at scale, a 4% return at scale, unlevered, because now they've gotten all their cash back, it's pretty good, right? That's yeah. not a terrible place to sit.
Yeah, it's not a terrible place to sit there at an $11 billion,
yeah,
$9 billion portfolio completely paid for, free and clear, earning 4%, right?
I mean, yep.
Things could be a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, plus you can manage it, right? So a lot of them set up their own management companies. So they own the management company, they own the maintenance company. And so, you know, as the portfolio is being built, they're also building the ancillary companies in order to support it. Those ancillary companies will support it for the entire lifeline of the fund. So, you know, they really make their money on management and maintenance long-term of these assets as well.
I love that. And so the average mom and pop that's sitting out there that's trying to build their own portfolio, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That wants to buy, you know, let's just talk about this. The advice you would give somebody, right? Let's do it this way. You got a lot of people, whether they've been laid off or for whatever reason, they've had some money sitting in an IRA account on the sidelines, $500,000, $1 million. And they are hearing what everybody else is hearing, right? They may be, we may be talking to them right now that there's a very good chance that in certain markets, there's going to be a lot of distressed assets that they can kind of pick up on the cheap and start maybe riding on the way back up. And while that's happening, you know, create some cash flow. Sure. What's your advice to them? What would you be telling somebody if they were coming to you and say, Dan, I got $1 million and I'm thinking about doing this?
Yep. Yeah. I think if they're, you know, you've got a couple different buyers, but I think the buyer that's looking specifically for yield on their money that would be sitting elsewhere, my advice to them would be to buy everything that the major investors aren't buying, right? So when a mom and pop investor walks into our environment, we typically put them into properties that are closer to the city's core, that are probably a little bit older. You know, some of these institutions have very strict guidelines and say, okay, you know, we don't want to buy a home unless it's 2000 or newer build. But what's happening, right, is we're seeing kind of the you know, human nature has us wanting to go back to the city core right now. So everybody wants to urbanize, but all that product in those urban cores tends to be a little bit older. So I think there's a lot of opportunity in that stuff. The other piece is, you know, the advantage the local investor has over the bigger institution is the fact that, like, we can rehab houses where these guys just simply can't. You know, most of them won't buy a house if it needs more than $20,000 of renovations, just because the management of that renovation is so complex and takes like a person-to-person management situation that they're just not built for that, right? So they can deal with carpet paint and all those things, but what they can't deal with is, you know, a room addition that needs to get permitted, or a garage that, you know, we've got to tear down, or something along those lines, tearing down walls. They're just not doing those kinds of rehab. So I think there'll be a great deal of opportunity in city cores with either big rehabs or aged assets in those markets. You know, I think you're going to see a lot of the populations that are sitting in the outlying cities. A lot of these people are going to want to get back to the city core, right? And right now, there's just not a lot of rental product in those markets. So, you know, you can track it. Like in our market, we track those city markets like that and those metros. We really can identify that it's way underserved for rentals. And if we had a rental, we could probably get a premium for it. So there's some value in location, you know, even more so coming forward, for sure.
I love that, dude. That's a great insight. So Dan, you know, talk to everybody here. I mean, you touched on it at the beginning, but I want to give you the opportunity to kind of talk to, I have a lot of agents that are here. Talk about, you know, iRealEstatePros, kind of, you know, what's the value there? And again, the context, we all know where we are right now, but we also know it's going to be a very different environment here sooner rather than later.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So we created iRealEstatePro to really empower the real estate agent to give the consumer the best consumer experience, right? And so the analogy I use is basically like if you were a consumer and you were going to, you know, you wanted one of these instant offers. In order to get those instant offers, you'd have to go to individually to every single one of these iBuyers and shop the iBuyers to see which one's the best fit for you. Well, we as real estate agents actually get a huge value in this where we can become, we're essentially the Priceline.com, right? The real estate agent's really the ultimate aggregator of this information. If we know which value proposition best suits our consumer, and we can actually show it to them, we're the only people that can put all of those side by side and explain it to our consumer in a format that they'll actually understand, right? So like, for example, Opendoor can never get an offer from Zillow. Zillow can never get an offer from OfferPad, right? So when they go there, they're getting one thing. When they go to you as an IREP certified agent, we show them all available options in the market. And so the key for a real estate agent, especially when this thing comes back around, is the idea that, you know, at the closing table, at your listing presentation table, you've got to eliminate consumer doubt and build consumer credibility. Those are our two main focus points, right? So by building consumer credibility, we're sitting with the consumer, we're showing them all these available options. Whether it serves us as the real estate agent or not is irrelevant. What we do is we put the option in front of them, because if they go there without us, I'm probably going to lose them on the buy side of the transaction too, right? They're going to go sell their house to one of these iBuyers and I'm not going to be able to transact with them on the buy side. So, but you know, if I show them the option and I say, hey, look, I also don't get paid by this group, or, you know, in most cases we do get paid, but let's say they don't, or the fee's less, so you get cut down in fee. Now we're actually building consumer credibility through that, right? And so they say, okay, you know, Dan's a trusted advisor now. He's showing me all these available options. He's taking his salesman hat off. It's not what serves him, it's what serves the client. So I think what we've got to understand is like, we as a real estate community have had we've had a really fun run of there's not been a ton of really great data for consumers in the marketplace. But those days are gone, and now consumers are super knowledgeable. They're aware of all these groups, and then these groups are doing a really good job of marketing directly to our consumer. So, you know, the thing I looked at in Phoenix specifically was that, you know, a group like Opendoor sees 18,000 organic leads on their website every single month, 18,000. So like, I don't know about you, but I don't get 18,000 leads on my website. So what I said is, why aren't I marketing with that same message, right? Why shouldn't I be marketing to consumers saying, hey, I can deliver you an instant offer. Oh, and I can deliver you multiple instant offers, right? I can give you all of these available options. If that's the message that the consumer wants to hear, I don't even need to argue with it, right? Like, I'm not going to sit there and badmouth the iBuyer. What I'm going to do is embrace it. I'm going to say, okay, if that's what the consumer's shifting to, then let's bring it to them, right?
Let them do the heavy lifting.
Yeah. So an IREP certified agent is trained to, you know, really get the consumer the most educated offer from the iBuyers. Really, you know, we dove deep into understanding the logarithms of each of the iBuyers so that we were giving the right data to the machine so we can get accurate data back, right? So we make sure that every single agent goes out and they take very specific photos. They fill out a property condition report and they submit to these iBuyers in a format that yields not always the highest offer, but the most educated offer, right? I don't want them to get into a property or a trade where we're having to retrade it at post-inspection. We don't want to do that, right? That's not a good situation. So we're trying to get the most educated offer in advance. What we find is that when the consumer is shown all of the offers side by side, right now, 60% of the time, we're doing this, and IREP certified agents all over the country report this, 60% of the time, the consumers are still selecting the traditional sale option. But what we did was we eliminated their doubt that one of these other options works for them, right? So when they see the next commercial for Opendoor, they see the next OfferPad, you know, listen to the next OfferPad radio commercial, they know confidently that they looked at that as an option and it just didn't work for them, right?
Yeah, they're not looking over their shoulder.
And in some cases, right, like we're totally shocked by the fact that when we present these options to a consumer, how many consumers are actually willing to take a little bit of equity, right, to not have to deal with listing their property traditionally. The consumers never had this option before. So now that they do have it, we're just surprised by the number, but it doesn't mean they're wrong, right? It just means that that's what they want to do. And so what we educate in iReal Estate Pro is putting the consumer first. You know, you empower the consumer for the best experience possible, which means that they looked at every available option and they were able to make an educated decision based on the value propositions that each one of them delivers. So it's not just the price, right? It could just be the unique value proposition, like the free local move, or it could be, you know, the late checkout program where you can stay in your home for 2 weeks after closing. I mean, that to a lot of people makes a big difference, right? I've got 4-year-old triplets at home. You imagine me trying to pack my house up every time I was going to show it and then pack it up to move twice into potentially my next home. Right. You know, that's not realistic. So to me, that value proposition is much, much bigger than it is to someone else. And so I think we as real estate, you know, what we educate in iReal Estate Pro is that we as real estate agents just need to get out of the way. Look at all of these tools on the surface and say, okay, it's an option for our consumer. I'm going to bring them the option. If they decide to go down that road, great. At least I'm in the conversation. If they don't decide to go down that road and they want to list traditionally, that's cool too. Like, I'm going to show them how to do this. And, you know, the cool thing as on a marketing perspective is that, you know, it's the buzzword. Everybody wants to talk about iBuyer. Everyone wants to talk about what this is. And, you know, real estate people, when they're selling real estate for years, have wanted to do it on their own. We've been talking about FSBO since the earthquake, right? And so now if we can empower the consumer with a tool to be able to kind of do this themselves, some of them really, really embrace it. They really, really like it, you know?
I think one thing that's really interesting, I mean, you said a bunch of stuff that's really interesting, but something that that really kind of hit me when you were just talking is, you know, when Open Door came into the market, or iBuyers in general, I'm not even going to call them out specifically, yeah, but there was a lot of friction between them and agents, right? And it was not this symbiotic relationship, even a little bit.
Yeah.
And iBuyers have certainly learned, and I know you guys have kind of are out the forefront of that, that working with the agents kind of helps grease the gears of a lot of situations there, which I think is a really big lesson for all of my people out there as well, right? Yeah. All of my investor clients that are out there trying to build their own businesses, and they're, you know, especially the wholesalers that are trying to find deals and connect with that, working with the agents in a very symbiotic way can actually not only create a lot of deal flow for you, but can actually help get deals across the line, right? They don't have to be the enemy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it started here in Phoenix. Open Door started here about 7 years ago now. And we first started in a world where I was just bringing, you know, I would bring my instant offer, my personal instant offer, and I would bring an Open Door offer and then their go-to-market value. And what I learned pretty quickly is that consumers are way smarter than I thought, right? They already knew about OfferPad. They knew about Zillow. They knew about all these other options. And so by me not bringing that stuff to the table, I actually lost credibility. I was losing transactions because I wasn't bringing them to the table. So that's when I said, okay, I'm just going to bring every buyer I possibly can to the table and let the consumer decide what's in the best interest of them. I know on the wholesale side, you know, that's a little bit different, right? We're trying to get some kind of spread in these deals. What I've been talking to a lot of wholesalers about is the idea that, you know, they should at least get an offer from at least one iBuyer or work with a certified agent so that they've got them in their back pocket. Because, you know, we typically know within like 15 minutes of sitting down with the consumer, if that instant offer that you've calculated is going to work for them, and you're going to be out the door and you're going to have to, you know, drip email these people forever. Or do you want to stay involved in the conversation and potentially close them there and say, look, you know, here's my instant offer, which is a wholesale offer, no contingencies. I'm going to go hard on my earnest deposit today. Or, you know, you could do that and they go, no, that price doesn't work for me. You could say, well, I've got another option for you, but it comes with some contingencies. And, you know, if you want to go down that road, I brought those options with you, but I thought you said you'd rather go down this road, right? So now you're letting the consumer drive the conversation, and a lot of the consumers really like that. And a lot of our localized wholesale guys have really liked it too, because they're giving another option to the consumer where that appointment probably would have died at that point. I don't know about you, but like, I like to value my time. So if I'm going to go out to an appointment, cultivate a lead, do all those things, like I at least want to walk away with something. I don't want to get zero when I'm showing up at the house.
So are iRep buyers in every major market right now? Are you, I guess you, last time we really spoke about this in depth, I know there were very specific markets you guys.
Yeah. So we typically, you know, we have most of our certified agents are in markets where we're seeing a heavy iBuyer traffic, right? So if you were to go on one of these iBuyer websites and see, you know, they're in about 26 markets today. That's where we're seeing the bulk of our certified agents. But what's funny about that is we've got agents in, say, Idaho, Boise, Idaho today, where there's no iBuyers. But what they're using is they're using the message. They're using the same exact message that we're delivering. They just are the buyer, right? So instead of them sending the property to Opendoor, they are the buyer. So right. They're marketing to the consumer with that message. They're the buyer on the back end. And they, you know, I call it our rip off and repeat department. That's where, you know, they're just using the message that works. Cause you know, the reality is like the consumers in Idaho are no different than the consumers in Southern California. We all buy stuff on Amazon, right? So this is what we're used to, right? The traditional real estate, you know, model as we know it creates friction between consumer and real estate agent, right? It's the only transaction that I can think of right now where the consumer doesn't drive choice, right? Everything else we do, we get choice, except in the real estate transaction, right? And there's no certainty. So if we can deliver a little bit of that, it's almost just what they're used to, right? It's what we're used to, and everything else we do sure, as a consumer.
To the choir here. This was yeah. The whole thing with cribs.
Right.
Just yeah. Keep talking about it is making my blood boil.
Dang it. Re-get it going. So, you know, we have ability for investors in markets to be able to sign up on our platform. You know, we have some requirements in there to make sure that they can buy a certain number of homes and response times and things like that. Like we're very sensitive to our consumer experience who's an agent now. But as long as the investors are willing to transact and, you know, it's someone that, you know, has some credibility, we're letting them into the program where real estate agents are submitting opportunities to them daily. You know, so we've got some of the, you know, we go from some of the biggest institutions in the world down to the mom and pop investor that's, you know, agents are working with in order to put opportunities in front of, because just a lot of times the inventory doesn't work for the major institution and the mom and pop investor becomes the only option, right? So now you've got a consumer that wants an instant offer, but that instant offer isn't available just maybe due to the demographics of the property or physical condition of the property, but you and I might buy it, right? And I think that's where the message works, right?
So I think you and I are working on something where we're going to release it out to my tribe on how they can make offers there, or they can submit their properties to you guys, so the institutions will take a look. If I have investors that want to work with your agents, do they just go to irealestatepros.com?
They do, yeah. Just go to irealestatepro.com. We've got a section on there where they're an investor. They can click on, submit their information, and we'll reach out to them and go over the model with them.
Love it. Where do you think the iBuyers and the institutions are going to, are we looking at Q2, Q3, Q4? I mean, I know it's kind of, nobody really knows, but what do you think?
Yeah. I think as soon as you see the government lift of, you know, as soon as we see the flattening of the curve, right? So, I mean, as soon as that curve starts to flatten and the government comes out, CDC says, okay, it's now safe to go back into your offices. That's when I think we're going to start to see active offers be made. I can tell you today, our institutions, I've got two in Phoenix, we're making offers and it's totally exploratory because we just don't know where the numbers are going to fall. But we're making offers, right? So, you know, it's not completely down to zero. But the iBuyers, like your major iBuyers, it's got to be a safe environment for not only them, but all their employees. And so that directive is going to have to come from a CDC level person, you know, before they're willing to take those risks.
So Dan, where do people go if they want, I know we just sent them to irealestatepro.com and I know we're going to have a site that we're going to release to our tribe here soon. Yeah. Where would people get connected with you otherwise?
They can find me on Facebook. So just Dan Noma Jr. You can go to iReal Estate Pro on Facebook, or Venture REI is our brokerage page as well. You can find me there. My personal Facebook page is out there. So everybody can check it out there. There's tons of up-to-date stuff. We've been doing a lot of webinars recently. Obviously, I'm stuck in my home office here, so it's been good.
Stuck in your home office with triplet four-year-olds, mind you.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm used to being patient, but this is a new level of patience for me. it's been fun.
I see you're shaving like me.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long it's gonna last, but it's so far. I was spent the weekend. I'm like, I'm not shaving this weekend. So here you go. But yeah, I mean, you know, anywhere on Facebook, they can reach out, and, you know, happy to dive deep with anybody on like data stuff too. Like that's where our team really has been focused, is, you know, how to predict the right seller at the right time. And I think that's something that, you know, you and I could probably talk about for hours, but it's, that for us has been kind of our sweet sauce on just, you know, understanding data, who to market to. Like, we got tired really early of spending money on mountains of mail, so to speak. So we said, okay, how do we get smarter with this? And so we spent a lot of time, energy, and money, you know, investing into data and understanding stuff. And, you know, it's been kind of fun. And like, I might be the only person you guys ever meet that has a mindset coach, right? So I study not only my mindset, but I study consumer thinking, right? So I want to understand how people are thinking of stuff. And once you can shift the way you think, and, you know, into understanding what the person sitting across the table from you is thinking, it's probably the most powerful tool I've ever had in my business.
Totally.
Yeah.
100%, man. The psychology of it all, and the triggers, and the, yeah, and, you know, I mean, the ability to influence and persuade and understand and be empathetic. I mean, it's just, seriously, it's probably the single greatest skill you could have out there, because you can get your ideas become winning ideas, right?
And yeah.
You can't get better than that.
Absolutely.
Well, dude, I appreciate you doing this. This has been amazing. It's exactly what I wanted. I know you and I got some big things in the works. I'm excited for us to kind of keep exploring more stuff that we can be doing in the next year and well beyond. It really matters to me that you showed up here for our tribe today. So, dude, thank you so much.
Absolutely, man. Thanks, and stay safe out there, everybody.
All right, buddy. Be cool. Take care. Right,
cool. Thank you.
Hey, thanks again for tuning in to today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you haven't gotten signed up yet with one of our award-winning products, I would invite you to go to reww.com. Check it out. Whether you're looking for advice on entrepreneurship, you're just looking for access to our Real Estate Investing Academy, whether you want to attend one of our upcoming live events, everything you need is right there. Plenty of videos, plenty of free training, plenty of access to software and tools that will help you to become a really successful real estate investor. Again, everything is right on the site at reww.com. You can also check us out at kempclothier.com.